Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with returning guest Gary Bobroff about his research and book titled Young Crop Circles and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one. Mandatory GMO labeling bill passed in Vermont Senate could be nation's first. It's a Reuters story by Carrie Gillum and Lisa Bartling. The Vermont Senate passed a bill last week that would make the state the first in the U.S. to enact mandatory labeling of foods made with genetically modified crops. The bill, approved 28-2 by the Senate, has already passed the Vermont House of Representatives. It now goes back to the House to see if members will approve changes as made by the Senate. The law is set to take effect July 1, 2016. The move in Vermont comes as developers of genetically modified crops and U.S. grocery manufacturers push for passage of an opposing bill introduced in Congress last week that would nullify any state law that requires labeling of foods made with genetically modified crops. The Vermont law passed by the Senate would do just that. Processed foods that contain genetically modified corn, soybeans, or other GMO ingredients and sold at retail outlets would have to be labeled as having been produced or partially produced with, quote, genetic engineering. Andrea Stander, a spokesperson for the Vermont Right to Know GMOs Coalition, said they expect the biotech industry to sue in an attempt to stop enactment of the bill. As such, the language of the bill includes formation of a fund that would pay legal bills. It's not just Vermont, said Stander. This affects everyone who eats. Consumers all across the country have woken up to the fact that we've become an unregulated feeding experiment by the biotech industry. People want to know if their foods are made with these ingredients. This gives people the choice. I want to interject here that, remember the documentary film, Why in the World Are They Spraying, and the connection that was made in that film to the aerosol operations and subsequent fallout from those operations that were tested on the ground, testing high in aluminum. And then Monsanto and other biotech industries come out with an aluminum-resistant seed or a drought-resistant seed for farmers. That was breakthrough investigative work in that film. Vermont is also the only state where you can opt out from having a smart meter installed on your home. Other states where you can opt out, you usually have to pay a monthly fee of from $10 to $30 a month because you've opted out. So the article continues, consumer groups say labeling is needed because of questions both about the safety of GM crops, known as GMOs, for human health and the environment. The language of the Vermont bill states foods made with genetically engineered crops potentially pose risks to health, safety, agriculture, and the environment, and should be labeled. Last October, a group of 93 international scientists issued a statement saying there was a lack of empirical and scientific evidence to support what they said were false claims the biotech industry was making about a consensus on safety. The group said there needed to be more independent research, as studies showing safety tend to be funded and backed by the biotech industry. But GMO crop developers such as Monsanto and their backers say genetically modified crops are proven safe. Quote, this debate isn't about food safety, said Karen Batra, spokeswoman for the biotechnology industry organization. Quote, our science experts point to more than 1,700 credible peer-reviewed studies that find no legitimate concern. Batra said mandatory labeling creates needless... Who cares what she says, really, at this point? It's ridiculous. Ballot measures in California in 2012 and last year in Washington state narrowly lost after Monsanto and other GMO crop developers and members of the Grocery Manufacturers Association poured millions into campaigns to defeat the measures. The Vermont bill makes it illegal to describe any food product containing GMOs as natural or all-natural, unlike bills passed last year in Maine and Connecticut, which require other states to pass GMO labeling laws before they can be enacted. Vermont's law contains no such trigger clause. I want to read a comment from a listener from last week's show. Last week we had on Bonnie and John Mitchell talking about the use of sigils and mnemonic devices embedded in the visual information in television to affect the subconscious mind. And the listener writes, "I agree with your recent program on TV mind control. Years ago, I met an MIT professor on a plane flight from a vacation. Our conversation regarding technology led me to ask him, 'Why is the government pushing us to purchase HDTVs?' He responded that the HDTV system sends out wave patterns that are similar to our brain's alpha waves, and this will let us comfortably adjust to the programming. The purpose for this becomes clear when you think how easily we, the public, have accepted the criminal behavior of both Wall Street and our government, and how we were manipulated by television media to ignore the 99% protests, and how we continue to spend money on products made by the same corporations that left us jobless, and how we're being prepped toward an apocalyptic future of enslavement, fascism, and war." Thank you for that feedback. Listeners, you can send me a message through the station's website, wbai.org. You find In Other News in the programs, and it says send an email. You can do it right there. We've had on a number of experts and psychiatrists talk about Carl Jung's psychological theory of the human shadow. There are critical components of ourselves to acknowledge because if unrecognized, the human shadow begins to grow and evolve on its own without your awareness and will usually come up for you in situations when you're under stress. That moment, as past guests Laura Shapira and Dr. Connie Zweig explained, is also when you can recognize your own buried treasure. However, if this exploration is suppressed, your hidden treasure could remain buried. Our returning guest, Gary Bobroff, says there's an ongoing shift away from negative components within the dominant masculine energy and toward the feminine archetypes and models. Jung, Crop Circles, and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine is the title of his recent book. We continue the discussion with Gary in using Dr. Carl Jung's theories as a lens to examine enigmatic topics such as the crop circle phenomenon. Gary is an internationally acclaimed author and speaker. He's also a Jungian-oriented psychotherapist in private practice. His website is gsbobroff.com. Gary, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Jeff. Thank you.
It's nice to have you back, and we'll also get a chance for listeners to get some questions and comments in a little bit later in the next half of the show.
Great.
Mark Passio, who's been on the show before a few weeks ago, also emphasized the importance of recognizing the human shadow personally and collectively. He pointed out another dynamic amid the sacred masculine and feminine, and that is a deliberate suppression of a component within the sacred masculine, action. Specifically, action needed to protect the sacred feminine. And there's an excerpt in the book King, Warrior, Magician, Lover that is often quoted in various presentations. And it reads, "What is missing, for the most part, what many psychologists assume is missing, is the adequate connection with the inner feminine. In many cases, these men seeking help have been, and continue to be, overwhelmed by the feminine. What they are missing, or what they were missing, was an adequate connection to the deep and instinctual masculine energies, the potential for mature masculinity. They were being blocked from connection to these potentials by patriarchy itself and by the feminist critique upon what little masculinity they could still hold on to themselves. And they're being blocked by the lack in their lives of any meaningful and transformative initiatory process by which they could have achieved a sense of manhood. Well, this is a complex dynamic, Gary. And as you've mentioned, there's the masculine inflation imbalance right now. And add to that the suppression of a critical part within the sacred masculine that occurs, which also affects the sacred feminine. Could you talk about this?
Yeah, sure. I could talk about that all night. but I'll try and get as much in briefly as I can. You know, the thing with what he's really talking about with that component of the masculine that is action is the warrior archetype. And, you know, we all come into this world with a certain hand we're dealt. And some of us come in really adept at the warrior, and some of us come in really missing it and needing it. And it can be, you know, for all of us, some of these archetypes are in the shadow and some of them are in the forefront. So, you know, nobody's got everything at their, you know, fingertips. Nobody can be all these archetypal qualities perfectly. Each of us is granted certain talents and certain weaknesses and certain things in our shadow. So, you know, for me, the quest to reclaim the warrior when it's missing in men, it's a personal quest. Many of us are trying to reclaim that warrior energy, the energy that leads us to assert ourselves in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a big part of the work I do. I do workshops called the Archetypes of the Feminine and Masculine, and the website for that is yourmyth.com. So I've been thinking and watching the world through the lens of archetype for 20 years. And, you know, it's really clear that there's some people that have gifts with one and not the other. But then there's all this cultural milieu that goes through it. And, mm-hmm. you know, our culture is very, very, very warrior and has been increasingly so since, you know, the 80s. You know, our governmental philosophies got more and more warrior, more and more kind of independence-oriented, make it or break it kind of thing. And you see the Tea Party really playing this out. Both sides of the Republicans kind of playing that out and emphasizing the warrior and self, you know, self-determination and you know, go out there and get everything yourself kind of attitude, every person for themselves attitude. And then into this world, which is so dominated by the warrior archetype, and that it's a fight. And you can really look at our whole economic system as based on like who's willing to get more invested in the warrior, do more, you know, fight more, you know, and then you'll be rewarded. I mean, our whole society is especially in America, is a warrior society.
In this book, King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, it mentions that these men were being blocked from connection to these potentials by patriarchy itself. And the so the action needed to protect the sacred feminine is the warrior energy in the sacred mm-hmm. masculine. However, those potentials are being blocked by patriarchy, which affects the sacred feminine, which you're talking about is reemerging right now.
Yeah, and I can think, you know, I think just a popular example for me is, you know, I saw the great film that I'm sure you've seen, Jeff, called Occupy Love, where it's about the Occupy Wall Street movement. And you can see, you know, in that movement, you know, a return to these feminine values where people are, you know, emphasizing love and emphasizing community and all these, you know, other things, environment, that are, for me, very connected to the feminine. And I don't really see it as the patriarchy or even, you know, the feminists blocking people from access to the warrior. It's just that each of us, there's ways that they can do that. But I think the bigger question is that each of us just come into this world missing some pieces, or that having more strength in one area and less in another, and that we need to try to reclaim some of that in order to be happy and healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole book that I write about crop circles really has to do with that. Do you want me to get into that?
Well, yes, we can. And Dr. Paul Dobransky, who's been a past guest a number of times, has created his own presentation and book and video series on dialing in your specific archetype. And he works with people all the time in that area. And we've had him on discussing this, and we've tried to use some of his work material as premiums. But yeah, let's get into your specialty here. And I just wanted to mention that one of your guests in the webinar series that you conducted earlier this year was Jaz Razul, who talked about time distortion fields inside crop circles. And boy, this is really interesting. From a scientist, he really gets into a very fascinating part of your research here. And we have a short clip. I just want to play this short clip from that webinar of Jaz addressing that topic. Let's go to that right now.
The other thing to consider, of course, is I spoke to a lot of people who've gone through into circles and they've psychologically been affected. And that's not surprising. If there's a static electrical field, or even if there's one that's something that leads to cameras being drained of their batteries, then human beings are essentially electrical beings, especially as far as their nervous system is concerned in their brain. So obviously, if the electrical currents get affected along our nerves, it can also affect the sensors on our skin, which are basically operating on bioelectricity. So sensations that we associate with cold, heat, pressure, all sorts of things that our sensors pick up on our skin, they're going to get stimulated. It doesn't mean that we're actually feeling anything. It just means that our body can be fooled into feeling something because the electrical field is there. So it still nevertheless can have an effect on the nervous system that can have a consequent effect on our consciousness and the quality of it.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're saying kind of, you know, there's the possibility of both harmful and positive effects.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people look at these things and think, oh, you know, that must be a wonderful, mystical thing. Let's go and play in them. Well, when you know there's particles of radioactivity in them and you know there's electrical fields that drain people's batteries, you really got to ask yourself a question. Do you really want to be rushing in there, you know, willy-nilly without approaching it really carefully and respectfully?
Yeah, and I think, too, the thing is, you know, you hear about people having both positive and negative effects, and I think part of it is to listen to yourself and listen to your body and listen to your intuition about it, but also, in general, just be careful, you know, especially with a new formation, especially one, I would say, of this size, you know.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, the larger the formation, the more the collective overall field of electricity. One thing I understand from physics is that electricity is kind of a shadow of a, you know, higher, more unified force, which is what we all know as gravity. Often when I was exploring crop circles and people asked me to go in and perhaps even give presentations on what the scientific roots of them might be, one of the things I'm conscious of is that if this is a leftover from some kind of shift in gravity, then it means it could also be a leftover as a result of shift or a warping of space and time. And that's always interesting because if it affects people's time experiences, then things might not be what they appear. For example, if something appears to be just materializing in an instant, well, what if our sense of time has been distorted because gravity has been altered and the fabric of space and time has been altered? But in reality, it took a lot longer to actually be created. But we're just seeing things because time in some way has been distorted. So that's something, you know, we can go into a little bit deeper perhaps later. But it's just interesting to note that people's experiences are actually influenced by that environment, but they may not know that it's being influenced.
You know, one of the really interesting things that, you know, I get into in the book and that we can explore with crop circles is this connection to time. And, you know, there's some very strange reports in the literature of people having experiences of time of, you know, wandering into a formation and being gone for several hours, and they feel like it's only been 5 minutes, and you know, their friends say, "Where have you been?" when they come back, and that sort of thing. And that's not just happened to one person; that's happened a lot.
And that was an excerpt from one of your webinars, Gary, with guest scientist and spiritual teacher Jazz Razul. And Gary, there's a lot of folklore connected to this that you've researched in your book, titled Young Crop Circles and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing with, you know, with crop circles and my whole approach to it is that, you know, if we look at the science of the phenomenon and the history, that very clearly we can know objectively that there is something unusual, non-human made going on. You know, there's cellular change, there's biochemical change, there's physical changes, there's germinal changes, there's electromagnetic changes, and this is all, you know, very clearly and well documented, and we can know this. So we use our masculine side, the side of us that knows, you know, with clarity and rationality and distance and separation and objectivity, that there's something going on. Then, you know, we're left with now what? And that's where I think that our culture is really at this moment, where we need to open up to feminine answers. And sometimes those answers are mysterious. You know, we're at a moment in time when we are very high on ourselves culturally, and we're high on ourselves only through that mode of us, which is the masculine half, the half that, you know, is really values being right, really values being certain and having all the answers. And, you know, crop circles and these other mysterious phenomenon that are around today, like synchronicity and, you know, the issues with quantum physics and the observer-observed problem, you know, we know we're on the edge of really, truly grasping that we are participating in a much deeper mystery than we ever could have imagined. And with this specific example of the experiences and changes of time in the formations,
right?
That's very challenging for people psychologically to accept that that happens, but it is reported repeatedly. And not only is it reported repeatedly in the literature of crop circles of people that are spending a lot of time over there, it's also a part of a tradition of stories like that that go back in English and Celtic and European folklore to do with fairies and the fairy world and the other world. And you go there and it, you know, it feels like, you know, a lifetime, and you come back and you've been only away a short period of time, or vice versa. And this is not coming from nowhere, that tradition of stories. There's a lot of reason to think that a lot of what people talk about with fairies may have to do with crop circles, because they're both in the same region. They both go back, you know, at least, you know, the crop circles we know goes back, you know, 350, 400 years that we know of. So, you know, the question today is, can we look at the evidence, and rather than throwing it out because it doesn't fit with our view of the world, can we just hold that tension and look at it and sit with it and then move to the next phase, which is being open to the mystery?
Oh, that's a great way to describe it, Gary, holding the tension. And speaking of that, you've been working on a symposium. It's coming up later this year. It's titled Synchronicity, and there's a story behind it. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, there is. The full title is Synchronicity, Matter, and Psyche Symposium. So, you know, I fundamentally believe that we're at the moment where we can really consciously understand that the psyche extends beyond the body, and that matter and psyche are of the same fabric. There's a way that even, you know, physical objects have some connection to psyche in some form. And, you know, one of the main ways that you know, Jung pointed this out 100 years ago, and that we've been observing since thousands of years ago, is the way that somehow events are brought into occurrence that are in just incredibly and almost ridiculously full of meaning You know, you were thinking about someone and the phone rings and you haven't heard from them in a year and you had not even thought about them, and then you think about them and then the phone rings and it's them. Or, you know, you run into someone and it's full with meaning. You know, Jung's classic example of this is the woman telling the story of a scarab, and then in her dream, and then there's a tap at the window. He opens the window and a scarab beetle flies in. And, you know, many of us have had tons of examples of that. And, you know, there are other people whose work has been showing that from a more scientific and objective place. And one of them is Rupert Sheldrake. His work, you know, he's worked in a lot of different fields and areas, and he's, you know, a very well-accredited, I believe, Oxford, you know, biologist, and written many, many books. But the ones recently that really fit with this mold are those that have to do with, you know, the way that the psyche extends beyond the body, and that it involves not only between people, but between people and animals as well. And Rupert wrote a great book. He's got a book out now called The Science Delusion, which really takes us right into the face of the mainstream worldview, and just, you know, calls it on the carpet and really, you know, points out some of the flaws. But The Sense of Being Stared At book goes through all the tremendous amount of literature of psychic studies that have been done. And he's also been replicating those and working with other people that replicate them in different places, Holland and elsewhere. And, you know, there is just absolutely no shortage of evidence that we know that the psyche extends beyond the body. You know, the book is called The Sense of Being Stared At, and they would do experiments where people were being stared at, even sometimes through a closed-circuit camera. And, you know, then they said, you know, did you feel like you're being stared at or not? And this is all done very scientifically. And, you know, the results are clear that these kind of things go on. Not only that experiment, there's many, 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 many. Card guessing, you know, there's so many interesting parts of the data that he presents in that. With the card guessing, you find in all kinds of psychic tests that people that have a closer personal relationship, or people that are siblings, do far better. You know, that there's a way that their connection to each other is much easier, and people can card guess, you know, guess the card the other person's holding much better when they're emotionally connected to them. And that's one of the most interesting things about synchronicity as well, is that, you know, people sometimes think about synchronicity and they say it's a head trip and how can I figure out the meaning. And one of the things that you can miss is that there is never a synchronicity without feeling involved. And that's a radically different worldview than we have today, but it's also very similar to the one that the Chinese had when they were developing the I Ching and the Tao, and the sense that, you know, what is at the root of those teachings is that, you know, if we can have a sense of humble connectedness to the mystery of the world in a real emotional way, that there's a way that we are flowing with a larger force. And, you know, that is what we see from this research, is that, you know, there's a way that feeling and psyche extend beyond the body. And that is, you know, we live in a heart-shaped world, and we're figuring that out today. And it is a radical and new and beautiful, you know, view of the world. And it is entirely different from the one that our culture places upon us.
This is a really interesting area, too, because it reminds me of the phantom limb as well. Gary, we are at the bottom of the hour, and listeners, we're going to open the phone lines to talk with our guest, Gary Bobroff, the author of the book Jung, Crop Circles, and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine. We're going to take a short break. The number to dial is 212-209-2900 if you have a question or a comment for Gary. And we'll be right back after this break.
Going home. tell me, mama. Tell me, darling, now that it's time for me to go. Don't you hold me down and kill the man you love. Sweet mama, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? Mama, what you gonna do for love? Oh, when that sun shines, honey, and I'm living in your love again. Won't you let me know? Darling, what you gonna do now?
And our guest is Gary Bobroff, and we're taking your comments and questions. You can dial 212-209-2900 if you have a question or a comment. But Gary, can you finish up on that story, because something really intense happened?
You mean the rest of the TED story?
Yes, please.
Yeah. So the conference, the Synchronicity Matter and Psyche conference that we're putting on in September in Joshua Tree, California, features Rupert Sheldrake and Graham Hancock. And both of those gentlemen had their TED talks from Whitechapel in London taken down last spring, I believe, by folks within the TED background community who basically accused them of being, you know, woo-woo or something, and that they were successful in having these talks taken down. And both Rupert and Graham responded and offered, you know, to go into a debate about the issues and that sort of thing. And eventually, Ted put the talks back up. But the forces that had those talks taken down, I refer to them as skeptical fundamentalists. And they are very real, and they're very much out there in the TED community and in the Wikipedia community. And, you know, Wikipedia is essentially useless for anything cutting edge. And the reason that it's useless for anything cutting edge is because there's a community of skeptical fundamentalists who go on there and take down any information that they disapprove of from these cutting-edge phenomena. So you're not going to find anything about crop circles or, you know, synchronicity or other kind of cutting-edge phenomenon on Wikipedia, because they're pulled immediately by this very organized group of skeptical fundamentalists. And they are an expression of this overdrive in the archetypal masculine that is at the root of our cultural illness, that has us really caught up in, you know, my way, my truth is the only truth, and if you're wrong, then I'm going to do everything I can to tar and feather you. You know, they completely project the shadow onto anyone who disagrees with them, and, you know, they're never held accountable. There's no, you know, they just are allowed to do their thing. And it's part of the sickness of our age, that there's folks who are so caught up in needing to be absolutely right and can't tolerate a second of doubt. They, you know, they don't bother looking at the evidence. They don't, you know, they're not interested in anything that conflicts with their particular view of the world. And I call them, you know, fundamentalists, because I think that their view is a religious view. It's a review that is about a belief system that says this is what's true and this is what's not true. And it's no different from any kind of other extremism. And, you know, this disease that is in us from the archetypal masculine, that Jung was really clear that, you know, the biggest disease of our age is an over imbalance in favor of masculine qualities psychologically, and this grandiosity in our culture that has us totally enraptured with ourselves and with our technology. And, you know, it's like we have this with climate change crisis, and, you know, so many people think, well, we'll be able to fix it with technology. No, that is what is ruining it.
Right. We talk about that a lot on this show. I don't know if you knew that. Hey, we got some calls on the line. Do you want to take a couple calls here?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to Rico. Go ahead, Rico.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Rico, can you turn down your radio because...
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Hey, I hear you. Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
All right, well, I want a really fast story how I learned about this station. It's just like how your guest saying, synchronicity. I was having a terrible day driving down the car, and I was at a light, a cab driver. I live in New York City, and a cab driver literally rolled up right next to me and picked up a piece of paper that had your radio station on it. And at that moment, I literally just dialed right to it, and the guy was talking about what I was going through at that exact moment. It's one of the guys that come on like probably like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
So now I'm on the phone. I just walked into my garage, just cleaned it out today, and you guys are on. And the first thing you said was, it was like a connection. You might think of someone, and someone shows up. So just to just build on that, just faster, just to speed up, is like we are all connected, and like you said, the fundamentalists. What they're doing or have already done and been doing for years is continuing to separate us. You know what I mean? And create
yeah.
differences for us to not, like you said, instinctly have conversations. So when a black don't talk to a white don't talk to a Spanish don't talk to a Chinese don't talk to a Mexican. You see what I mean? So, but then again, if we had these conversations, like you said, instinctly, and we know we can have it without the fundamentalists, of course, because they're trying to push an idea on us or their belief. So that's why they don't listen to what we're trying to say, because we're coming from, like you said, a place of love, because that's what we do. That's what we are as human beings. If you wasn't having to sell books, could you imagine the things that you'd be thinking about beyond this stuff here? You would be probably lost in crop circles. You wouldn't even be riding those crop circles. It's like we're only doing what we're doing because of the fundamentalists. We're finding ways, like you said, technology is the death of the man. Because, like you said, being so smart, just like in the beginning of the Bible, if we have the Garden of Eden was given to us by God, something so perfect, what's the point of thinking there could be something better? You know what I mean? What's the thought? Why think it? So
yeah.
Now... we're not preserving what it is that we have, which is human being, which is life. We're killing it faster than
yes.
we know it. We're poisoning it. We're aborting it. We're burning them. We're blowing them up, nuking them. I mean, not to say nuking them now, but, you know, they keep talking about it. We're scared mentally that they're going to nuke something, somebody, somewhere. So it's like we as a people naturally need to just talk to each other. See a person, whatever the conversation could humanly be, just say something to that person to connect. And that's when the sync you're about to say, because once you create a connection of a love, a feeling, because like you said, it's all a feeling. You know what I mean? And that's how you get, that's a faith feeling. You feel like, you know, that person is, like you said, staring, a feeling.
Rico,
yes.
Yes,
sir.
Hey,
yeah.
I appreciate that. You said the S word. We had to dump that out. So, listeners.
I didn't mean to say.
Right. You really snuck it in there nicely, though. I didn't even notice it. But let's give Gary a moment to respond here.
I loved what you said, man.
Thank you, Gary.
That's great. That's great. And that's the energy that's emerging today. It's like, despite all this, you know, crap out there or whatever, this all this kind of negativity and all these people that think they know, you know, everything, that there's these people like you and me and Jeff that we're interested in exploring love and mystery and just, you know, just letting it be, just see what it is and be with it. And you don't have to have an agenda.
Word.
You know.
That's it. And that's what you, like you said, that's what creates the mystery, because they have an agenda. Like they're trying to show us something that they had for years. And we're just, like you said, about to now discover, you know, a high level of consciousness is coming, you know, and a lot of people will get it. And I believe it will overlook some people. And I felt like I fell on this radio station just like that guy gave it to me, because I'm
yeah.
on a higher level of consciousness. And every time I listen to the station, I swear to God, I feel like I know something better. I, you know what I mean? I can contribute better to the world because of what I know because of this station.
And it's such a radical notion that this, you know, that the universe is like, is making that, allowing that, or making that happen for us. I mean, what a beautiful world.
Man, and that's it. And right now, as I'm talking to you, I'm like shaking. So, I mean, it is just preservation of life, and life is love. And everybody knows that, you know, when you lose someone, you feel like you lost life. Like, damn, you're like, I lost a loved one. Mm-hmm. So if we didn't have to work, chase a dollar, penny, nickel, we would be loving each other all day and night. John Lennon said it, and they killed him. And you know, stay in bed, baby. Because that's it. If we didn't have to work, what would we be doing? Kissing our mothers, talking to our dads, playing with our brothers and sisters, go visit an aunt and uncle, a cousin and niece, you know? So, but now, because of these fundamentalists, they spread us across the world now. Easter, which just passed yesterday, some families are here when others are over there. You know what I mean? It's like the world, they expand. They spread us out. That's just the best way. We was all together, the world, then it just grew to just what it is today.
Yes, and they use all sorts of other apparatus as well and technology, such as the microwave transmitters and things like that to scatter the connectivity that naturally occurs. Rico, thank you very much for those comments.
Thank you, Rico.
Yeah, Gary.
Really appreciate that. Listeners, if you have a question or comment for our guest, Gary Bobroff, please call 212-209-2900. And we have another call on the air. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, it's Tom from the Bronx here. I'd like to say that the crop circles, personalities like George Washington or any of the luminaries of the day ever have any thoughts on these?
Yeah. You know, there's people that what happened was when we go back in history in England where they were finding them, that, you know, the earliest thing we have is from 1678, which is just a woodcut, which would be like an old newspaper, basically. And it has a picture of a mowing devil, like they thought the devil was making it, and a description that fits really with what we see today.
But then, how about the U.S.? Did they ever find those things there?
Well, the evidence is a little looser in the U.S. Like, there's some native accounts. There's a story called The Magic Basket that in native mythology that suggests crop circles, but we don't really know of any in the States historically that people have responded to, you know, any luminary figures. But, you know, I would think that the same places that they've been happening, you know, in the U.S. now, there's certain places where they appear, and often that they're ancient habitation sites. So Serpent Mound in Ohio and other places across North America where, you know, our ancient ancestors lived, those places are still, you know, homes for crop circles. So I would think that they happened here hundreds of years ago, but we just don't know that they did for sure.
Yeah. In other words, George Washington never kept the lights on at night looking out the window in fright.
No. Only from like 1686, there's an Oxford professor in England that he wrote his theories out about them, and he thought it was some kind of weather phenomenon, and he demonstrated them that way. And they still have, you know, those records from 1686 of him, his theories on crop circles and his descriptions of seeing them. And then there's an 1800 Nature journal from England where another person reports it as well. So, you know, we know that it's been going on for a long time.
Tom, thank you so much for that. Good to hear you again. We're going to go to the next call.
Hi. I'm trying to follow this conversation because there's an interesting concept, I think, that's coming to the fore here, which is that what's needed is a rebalancing of the male energy with female energy. But I would like the guest to talk about the role of violence against women, because if there's an imbalance, which I think we all see there is, between the male energy and the female energy, we are seeing a global phenomena of incredible levels of violence against women and girls, being destroyed through sexual violence, the very act that creates human life. And I would like the guest to talk about the role that men should be playing in ending violence against women so that we can have a rebalancing of this energy.
Yeah. I think you're talking, you know, about the cultural issue where, you know, you have certain cultures, whether it's here or in other parts of the world, that permit that or that create a culture that almost becomes allowed. A lot of what I'm generally talking about is subtler, and you know, when I talk about masculine and feminine, I'm talking about energies that we all have both. Even, you know, men have feminine psychological qualities and women have masculine ones. So we're all personally a mix, but you're really talking about cultural issues and certain places, certain subcultures in North America, certain cultures in other parts of the world that they permit that. And there's a way that they hate the feminine, and there's a way that they can, you know, hate women and generally hate sexuality. And for me, the way that fits, you know, it's not my area of expertise, but the way that fits with what I see in the world is that this masculine energy that is just, you know, for me, the root, you know, this imbalance in favor of masculine modes is the root of the destruction of the planet and the root of the fundamentalist folks as well, because what they want to do, psychologically what they're doing, is they're saying, spirit, you know, when we go up to heaven, that's great, and down here is bad and evil. So they're making matter and the world and sexuality bad, and heaven and up there is good. And that ultimately plays out in an Armageddon, because they're, you know, this is all bad. Everything in the world for them is bad. And, you know, only up in some sort of, you know, fantasy of what happens later, that's good. And so from those kind of positions where you're overhyping these cultures into really hating the world and hating, you know, the body and sexuality, and then women, you know, have been getting tarred with that from probably pre-biblical times, but certainly we know that even in the Bible that you know, 6,000 years ago that was happening. So how does that change, and what do we do about that? I think it's, you know, it's a big question, and there's a lot of things happening. I think for me, you know, there is a shift happening in the zeitgeist of getting conscious about what we're doing to the feminine, what we're doing to women, what we're doing to the planet, what we're doing, you know, the way that we are rejecting all the things of the earth, all the things that are down on the ground, sexuality, you know, the feminine qualities in men that certainly get, you know, shamed. All of that, for me, that we are in a time of getting more conscious about it. And I think we are. It's certainly not happening fast enough, but I think that the culture is moving in that way. You know, even in just small little things. I don't know, Karen, did you see Louis C.K. on Saturday Night Live recently?
No.
Well, he made a comment just about the way that, you know, we have that word for a tank top that's a wife beater, you
yes.
know, which is obscene, you know. And here's a man as a comedian on Saturday Night Live, and he made, you know, he was making jokes, but he was saying this is, you know, not okay. And I don't think that you would have seen that 10 years ago. And I think that there are people are moved to change these things. And I think that our, whatever the zeitgeist, whatever the background, you know, if you want to call it spirit or God or whatever, that makes these changes happen, I think wants us to really see what we are doing to the feminine. And as a Jungian, I'm speaking about the feminine. I include the earth, I include matter, I include women, and the feminine in men. So there's all these ways that we are finding out the horrors of what we do and being brought, it's like a dog getting its nose stuck in it, you know, like we're being brought to see it. And whether it's the earth and how we're destroying it, or, you know, the violence that's happening to women. It's more in our face. I think, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, you know, domestic violence was much more closeted and worse. You know, what's happening today is we're seeing it. I don't think that there's more domestic violence happening today. I think there's less. But what's there is that it's on the news.
Yeah.
We're being brought into consciousness about it. And, you know, a lot of cultures are coming from very old places psychologically. And we're in this intense time when, you know, we're really seeing that the old masculine ways don't work anymore. And so that the people that are really bought into that, they're more anxious than ever. They're more radical than ever. They're more scared than ever. And, you know, I don't know if there's things that I would specifically prescribe that we can do. I don't know how to fix that problem on a worldwide basis. But I do see a world that's making us really see it and get conscious about the evil we do in so many different ways.
Okay. Karen, thank you very much for that question. Really appreciate that. We're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to ask a question. Being that crop circles, basically, people haven't been able to notice them unless, like, you're up in the sky or, you know, there's a plane and you look down on them. Do you think there's an insidious reason for the crop circles, that there is a hierarchy that is making these things happen for some reason other than we know, or are these crop circles they're giving out energy all over the world? They're made there and they're drawn there for a reason, because there's so many different crop circles with all type of different designs and everything. Most of them you couldn't even see unless you were in a plane or you were up high. So, and as the gentleman before was saying something about the microwaves, like the energy, do you think there's an insidious plot, a hierarchy that is spewing out this kind of evil?
Great question, caller. We have to really hurry it up, and let's let the guest answer this. Go ahead, Gary.
Okay, thank you. You know, I don't see the forces behind crop circles as insidious, and I would say just the opposite. You know, to take the biblical approach, you know them by their fruits, and what their fruits are is these beautiful designs. So right there, it's beautiful. It's not ugly. So that makes me feel good. And then it's, you know, it's organic. It's down on the earth. It's in a living plant, and the plants are still alive. They're still living. They're not destroyed, you know. And then there's images of sacred geometry built into them. They're creative. You know, I see all those things. You know, if I'm supposed to know who's making them by their fruits, I think whoever it is or whatever it is, you know, it's creative. It likes beauty. It's and most of all, it would seem that they're trying to tell us something, that they care. And that really makes me, you know, feel good about whoever or whatever is on the other side of it.
Gary, we have another call. We have Rose on the line. Go ahead, Rose.
I just want to make the comment that the fifth deferment crowd, you know, the rapture crowd, who believe that they have to hurry up the end time because otherwise they might not get pulled up, are not masculine at all. I just think they're just so sick. I heard something today that there's a new neurological association that says that marijuana is bad, but, you know, you've got all kinds of pills that eat your liver up. Greed is the real issue here, and those people, even if they were in an airplane, they're so out to lunch that if they look down, they wouldn't be able to even discern whether it was good, natural, unnatural. They would have to destroy it, and that's who's in the driver's seat, and it's just not masculine. It is not decent. It is just on a path to imprison and do ugly stuff to everybody just for the fun of it.
Hmm. Gary?
Well, for me, you know, masculine and feminine are not neither good nor bad, and both have good and bad. So you can, you know, the feminine isn't all, you know, sunshine and, you know, beauty. I mean, there's a very dark negative quality there, and there's a very dark negative quality in the masculine too, and both have bright, you know, good sides and bright and dark bad sides. So, you know, that's a neutral term for me, and I don't, but I agree with everything else, you know, that she was commenting on. But
we are dealing with a contemporary monstrous situation, and we're quite powerless to stop these monsters. And they don't want you to meet. They don't want you to talk. They don't want you to do anything other.
Okay, Rose, thank you so much. Gary, I want to thank you for being a guest and taking the calls. It's wonderful to have you back on. Can you tell listeners how to reach you?
Yeah, well, right now, you know, I definitely want them to be able to find out about the conference, the Synchronicity Conference, Matter and Psyche Symposium with Rupert Sheldrake and Graham Hancock. And the website for that is matterpsyche.net, M-A-T-T-E-R, psyche, P-S-Y-C-H-E.net. And my website is gsbobroff.com. But check out matterpsyche.net and check out the symposium and let us know what you think.
Gary Bobroff, thank you so much for being a guest. Have a great evening.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next week, Monday, 10 p.m.
And so castles made of sand melts into the sea. Eventually.